All right, now, welcome to Crow 777 Radio. This is hour one of episode 667. Jason Lingard is with me, and we're very happy to be able to give a voice to Kiri Rivera. We're going to talk about a few things that are getting bandersnatched. We're going to talk like that, so you're going to have to put things together here. We're absolutely not going to talk about chlorine dioxide, because that's ridiculous, right? We will talk about things like CD. So put one and one together, and welcome, Jason.
And a cold good morning.
Indeed. We got pummeled with about 12 or 14 inches of snow with another nor'easter that may get us, but we'll see what happens. Anyhow, welcome, Kiri. So glad to have you.
Thanks for inviting me. I'm really happy to be here.
All right. Do you have any contact points, websites, books, or anything you'd like to lay down before we get into this?
Sure. My website is my name, KiriRivera.com. My books are there. My videos are there. How to get a hold of me is there. That's a great place to start.
Okay, here we go. So we have a very well thought out set of bullet points, and this will be critical information for some people. We're going to jump in talking about autism, the epidemic, and vaccines. It's all you, Kiri.
Well, you know, as we were saying just prior, is autism is avoidable, treatable, and we can't say the C word, so we're going to say recoverable. And with that, my son was diagnosed when he was 3.5 years old with autism. He was born healthy. He had a very neurotypical development until 12 months of age when the crying started, the diarrhea. And of course, I was giving him all of his childhood vaccinations. My child was born in 2000, the year 2000. I didn't have a smartphone. There was very little information out there besides these what to expect when you're expecting books. And so, of course, I was on it. Johnny on the spot. I was getting all his vaccines. He had all of them. And then by the time, like I said, he was one, I didn't know what was happening, but he started the crying and, oh, you know, maybe terrible twos early or teething or whatever. Anyway, kind of fast forward, this sent me on a journey. My son was officially diagnosed when he was 3.5 years old, which is really quite late. But I was living in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico at the time, which was kind of like a big ranch. Very little current information. Probably if I was in the States, I might have had a diagnosis sooner, at least somebody kind of raising an eyebrow that something might be wrong. And as a parent of a child with autism, you don't sleep a lot because they're not sleeping a lot. There's a lot of crying. Nights are terrible. Days are only marginally better. So as I went doctor to doctor in the United States, going to these biomedical doctors, which in my opinion are really managing autism, you know, there might be some improvements because they've taken the gluten or the casein, which are the protein, wheat, and dairy out of the diet, and given them a host of supplements based on their lab testing, the ability to recover a child on that is, you know, fat and slim. So I did that for about 6 years, blew through about $700,000, opened my own biomedical clinic in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico, with a 2.5-ton hyperbaric chamber, IV nurse, and we started doing everything that I was doing with my son in the United States, in Mexico, and for other children. It was a not-for-profit. And there, my understanding went up. And by the time 2010 hit, so now my son was going to be turning 10, I had literally tried everything from stem cells to hyperbaric, like name it, I tried it. And he was better, but it was still like a marginal thing. It was, you know, like I slept through the night most nights and, you know, didn't cry so much, except for when you brought him home and the drive in the car was too short and he was upset about it and I was screaming, yelling, all that kind of stuff. So I laid on the bed in my children's room during the day when they were at school and I prayed to every name you can imagine praying to, because I thought, well, maybe I wasn't nailing it. Maybe I was saying the wrong stuff. And I started to recall the stuff that I'd bought a year prior. And I think we're going to call it by its letters, right?
Right. We're going to play a CD here. And okay. Instead of people getting lost, just go listen to the intro and don't be dull. Just think. Okay, go ahead.
So I went and I checked it out and I activated it and it worked. And I thought, well, you know what? It was only $20, but you know, maybe this will do something. And I started to look on the internet and started to really investigate about, because autism is virus and bacteria and parasites and candida, biofilms, heavy metals, overall inflammation, neurotoxicity, all these kind of things. And this stuff was, you know, we're just going to go to the intro for this one, but this stuff supposedly gets rid of all those things. It neutralizes heavy metals, it kills pathogens, destroys viruses, reduces inflammation in the body and oxidative stress, et cetera. But then I was kind of nervous and it was also met with some disdain in my house because I had tried everything, I'd spent a lot of money and nobody really was interested in anything I had to say anymore. Fast forward, I go to the clinic, and this is all taking place the summer of 2010. Go to my clinic, and these two people that we know are getting out of my hyperbaric chamber. They were doing it for health purposes. And I'm like, hey, you guys. And they're like, we're taking the letters. And I'm like, oh my gosh, you've got to come to the house. I've been investigating for the last 6-8 weeks. He won't listen to me. He being the father of my children, won't listen to me about anything anymore because he's sick and tired of the whole, you know, the whole racket that is autism recovery and those biomedical doctors and stuff. But I have to try something. I can't do nothing for my child because I know that he can get better if not fully recover. And so they're like, yeah, sure, we'll come. So they go to the house. And so we're talking to Mr. Wonderful. And he's like, okay, we'll try it. And if, you know, if we don't die from it, then we'll give it to Patrick, our son. So a few days later, you know, we're still fine. Nothing bad, nothing good. Just, you know, we're just sort of starting on the journey. So we start Patrick on it. And I really don't know how to use it. Like, there's really nothing on the internet for, well, there was zero on the internet for autism. So I contact this Jim Humble and Mark Grennan, who are in the Dominican Republic, and they're doing workshops there to teach people how to use it and how to make it and all that kind of stuff. So I send an email to them because Jim had written a book some years prior. So I sent an email to them. Mark gets back to me. He says, I'll have Jim contact you, because I told him I had a clinic and I do conferences in Latin America and I travel internationally helping families, you know, but of course that there is a possible hope for the children. There wasn't that there was like a recovery protocol yet. So Jim sends me an email a couple days later, and he gives me some real, real, real basic information, like a child who's 25 pounds, one drop 8 times a day, a child who's 50 pounds, 2 drops 8 times a day, and a 100-pound child, 3 drops 8 times a day. That's kind of it. My son was 10 years old. He just turned 10, and he was exactly 100 pounds. So I said, okay, today we start with, and they're drops. They look like water drops. They don't look like anything. So, okay, 3 drops, 3 drops, 3 drops, 3 drops. And then around 5 o'clock in the afternoon, he projectile vomits. I'm like, well, you know, we'll probably hit some pathogens, and that can happen even if you do nystatin or, you know, something like that. So I give him the rest of the day off. And this is, again, my first day. So I really don't know what I'm doing at all. This is in 2010. And at 9 o'clock at night, now my child, if you didn't tell him it was time for bed, he would never say, like, I'm tired. Like, he would just stand there and sit in front of his touchscreen computer until the cows come home. There was absolutely nothing that was going to turn that off. And at 9 o'clock at night, he turns to me, says, and it was just me and him in the TV room. He says, I want bed. I was like, huh?
Wow.
He had words, but they were really very rote words. It was like, I want chicken. I want go walk. You know, like things that were very, nothing about that mundane, you know, taking a shower, going to bed, nothing like that. So I said, okay. And because I was alone, and, you know, you can hear things, I guess, if you're alone, I'm not really sure. So I just, okay. And I just stood there, and he starts marching up to his room.
So let me ask you, before you go further, how many inoculations did he get? And was he non-functional?
Oh, he got all of them, and he was absolutely non-functional.
When you say all of them, are we talking like 12? Are we talking 20?
72, probably. The one that took Patrick out, the one that was really noticeable for Patrick was the, they call it in Spanish, the pentavalente. It's 5-in-1. It's the DPT, hepatitis B, and influenza. And that one is when he got really messed up. He was about 12 months old. And also, he went from breast milk to cow's powdered milk. You know, these things that they have. And I lived in Mexico. They have them. I don't think they probably have them in the States too, but they're like a powder. You put water with it. And it's milk, basically. It's just a dehydrated form of milk. And so there was a lot of crying and diarrhea. And it was a train wreck.
So as you talk about it and what you just described, you played his favorite CD for him. And immediately, you'd never had a verbal communication about doing much of anything, let alone go to bed. And on the first day, after playing his favorite CD, he said, I'm tired, I want to go to bed.
Yeah, he said, I want bed. And I was like, wow. And so I just followed him up the stairs to his bedroom, in which he gets upstairs, he turns to me, he looks me smack in the eyes, and he says, I want take bath. And then I was like, oh my gosh, he just said that. Because the first one I was like, oh, because I was reading a book, he was on his computer. So it kind of happened. I was like, I think I heard it. I'll just follow along.
Did you draw the line immediately?
No, because all the doctors, now I had seen probably by that time 5, 6, 7 doctors in the United States. And they all told me that my child was a non-responder. Kind of meaning like they're useless, but they're going to blame it on him.
Okay. Oh, I should inject here. For everybody listening, an hour or two, we're running on a private server and we will talk as human beings talk. This is hour one. It goes out everywhere. And we're trying to speak in a way that allows the most people to benefit if there is a benefit to be had. So sorry for the interruption, Carrie.
No worries. No worries at all. So, yeah, I really didn't think that there was anything, but I was still shocked. You know, your child is telling you some basic stuff that, you know, never said before. And again, the way he looked me in the eyes. So when he took the shower, he was enjoying it. He had his sponge and he's sudsing up and he's very happy and smiley. And then when I go to dry him off, as I peel the towel back from his face and his hair, his eyes catch my eyes without this veil of autism that had been present for 8 solid years. Like, wow. And they would say, oh, does he have eye contact? Well, you know, that passing glimpse of whatever that thing is on the top of my head, like my face, and he would just sort of pass by. And then at this very moment, this August of 2010, like a week or two after he just turned 10 years old, the eye contact was typical. It was just him looking at me and smiling back at me.
Do you think he noticed the difference?
Of course. He was happy. He had been so unhappy up until that point.
Wow.
So unhappy. Oh, so unhappy. I mean, it just was, you know, everybody walked on pins and needles. It was kind of like, how's everything going today? You know, that type of thing. And so I get him out of the shower and, you know, I want brushed teeth. I'm like, oh my gosh, he's like asking for all these mundane things that he'd never asked for before. Then as I finish brushing his teeth, he's like, I want Kankit, 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 Kankit. Blanket, blanket, yes. And he runs and jumps onto the bed. So like running and jumping, even like in the pool, for example, he was a good swimmer. He didn't jump into the pool. He would walk down the stairs into the pool, like that jumping thing. And I don't know what the reason for that was, but he didn't jump. And he jumped into the bed and I was like, kind of like playing where like with the covers and sort of, you know, tossing kind of back and forth like you would a hot dog on a skillet sort of thing. And every time he would see my eyes, he would smile at me and his eyes were engaging. And I was like, oh my gosh, this is crazy. And then it kind of became like in the next days, I went back to my clinic and people were like, what do you do with Patrick in the last, you know, month that we were on vacation? I'm like, I'm giving them these drops that I got from a doctor in Guadalajara, because in Mexico, medical doctors sell it. Medical doctors use it. It is very used in Mexico, has been for, you know, at least in my case, I've been doing this my 17th year. So at least from 2008-09, doctors were selling it when I bought it. It was just a pediatric.
What were they treating?
Everything.
Everything.
Everything but autism. Everything but autism. Definitely autism was not there because when I was on the internet, there was nothing. Autism, ADD, ADHD, Asperger's, Tourette's, pandas, none of that was coming up. So that's why I went back and I said, okay, individually, we got a parasitis, we've got bacteria, we have candida, we have heavy metals. So it worked for all those things. It's not a chelator. It will neutralize the heavy metals. Then you can use a chelator to take it out.
Do you feel like the amount of time that goes by has any relationship to whether they'll recover at any level? Like if you would have been 15 or 20 years before you were able to play his favorite CD, do you think it would have made a negative difference?
I do believe the earlier you start to heal, the better results, the faster you would have, I believe. So for example, as children get older, the parents become more complacent, get tired, you know, tired of fighting that battle. The first 10 diets I did didn't work, so this one's not going to work too. The first few strategies that we tried didn't really get us anywhere. They were very expensive and a lot of effort was put into it. So why am I going to do this wholeheartedly? So that's what happens with my older kids. And when I say older, let's go with like 12 and over. So the 2-year-old through 9-year-old, I think you can really get some serious parents. But by 9, it starts to fade. Just really that whole mindset begins to fade.
Why do you think this isn't 100%? Like if every parent, you know, before the internet age went out, Johnny on the spot, did all the inoculations, do you have any idea why 100% of the young people weren't affected in the same way you experienced?
Well, every organism is different. And also, not just that, but for example, the parent, my friend, Dr. Roby Mitchell, rest in peace, he was an amazing doctor out of Amarillo, Texas. He was amazing in a lot of ways as a human being. But one of the things that he did share with me when I met him 12 years ago, something like that, 11 years ago, was an older mother, a mother like pre or post hypothyroid, stomach acid, the hydrochloric acid in our stomach, all of these things are factors as well. And now what I find is mothers who were jabbed while pregnant, that's another one, you know, whether they had the jabs that came out, you know, the warp speed jabs, or they had just a flu vaccine while they were pregnant. This also directly affects the children. I have a mother in New York whose child had one jab. It was the vitamin K, which actually is heavy metal. So it's, you know, it sounds like, oh, vitamins are good for you. Well, it wasn't. And she was also doing these green drinks during her entire pregnancy, but they were not organic green drinks. So she was probably getting a heaping helping of pesticides, herbicides, exactly, and the heavy metals that are in those as well. So there can be more than just one factor. A Rogam, that's another one. The Rogam shot has a lot of mercury in it. So they're injecting that into the mother while she's pregnant. And of course, the baby acts as like a sponge for toxins and heavy metals while the mother is pregnant. So that's another, or, you know, I did nails, I did my hair, I did my makeup, like all these kind of things are also other fountains of toxicity while the child is, you know, spending 9 months in the mother's body. So there's a lot of different factors, but I would say the one that most all of us would say is, you know, our child is born fine. And I would say 99.9% of the families that I work with, child's born fine, has this very typical development. You know, we're crawling on time, we're cooing on time, everything is on time. And then somewhere between usually like 11, 12 months and 24 months, eye contact goes, pointing goes, sleeping goes, constipation or diarrhea start, and all of these cascade of problems begin.
Wow. Do you feel like heavy metals is the primary concern?
No, I don't think that there is one primary, because they live in the body. The virus, bacteria, parasites, candida, and heavy metals are in them. Heavy metals are not alive, nor is virus, but they live in the body in biofilms, which are in the blood and in the gut. So they're not, there isn't one without the other. So whenever there's somebody who comes along and says, oh, you know, I've got this chelator and it's really great. And it's okay. What are you going to do with the rest of the biofilm? You're just going to ignore it. It's going to go away. Oh, I'm going to give you chlorella. Oh, there you go. It's not going to go like that. You really have to find something that can get at everything simultaneously. And you cannot just, you know, I have parents that I work with and they're like, yeah, well, the doctor worked and he wanted to get rid of the candida first and then go for the bacteria. That doesn't go like that either, because you're just constantly plucking away at one part of the biofilm. You must get at it altogether. You must destroy the biofilm in the gut and in the blood simultaneously, which is why the disc that we're listening to is the one that works the best.
All right. So let's sum up and get up to speed. So basically, your child was 10, pretty much nonverbal, pretty much non-functional. The first day you played his favorite CD, you had a verbal response that was night and day. You'd never experienced it before. Over the coming short period of time after that, other indicators like physical activity that a child normally has started to appear. And that was within days of playing his favorite CD. And I should ask before you get going, Jason, do you want to get in here?
Well, I was just thinking that the earlier, the better, I would think, because obviously a child is growing constantly. So the sooner you can start working on turning things around, absolutely, the child probably has the best chance of recovery, right?
Correct.
Well, I was thinking too of the habitual side of it. You know, when you do something for any human being does something long enough, it starts to habituate. But anyhow, where were we? I tried to bring us up to speed.
Well, basically, as far as the recovery, we were talking about how young, you know, if it's better if it's younger than older. And there's a lot of things. So there's a lot of different things that, you know, that took place in order to have, or you were asking also, you know, why, if it's one in 31 children that get the autism right now, which is an epidemic, what about those other 31 kids that didn't get the autism? Well, Dr. Sherry Tenpenny says that probably half of those children that did not get the autism did have a reduction IQ as well as learning disabled. So there are now, you have your ADHD, ADD, you have other kids in there, but they don't have an autism label. So they're really not fine. I'm 60 years old and nobody I knew had a sibling with any of these problems. And you know, this is just something that has just exponentially exploded over, of course, as the childhood vaccine schedule became very crowded with vaccines. And not to change gears, but it looks like RFK Jr. has been able to reduce the amount of vaccines in the childhood schedule from 72 down to 11. I think it remains to be seen if they're actually going to implement it, but that is the great hope that, like the Amish who do not vaccinate, they do not have any autism in their community at all.
That is a huge tell. And how are there any practicing medical folk out there that deny there's any connection with just that simple piece of information about the Amish? If you think about it, there's only a couple things it could be. Their diet's probably better than our diet, most of us. But to be able to say they've had zero inoculations, there must be a correlation there.
Absolutely. But they're never going to look at that. They're absolutely never going to look at, well, I can't say never, but they have not looked at that up until this point, which would just be the easy one. You know, if these people are not doing this sort of thing, or like you say, I mean, they're eating really clean food. They're not using the stuff that we use, just kind of in the general population I'm speaking. But there's a direct correlation, obviously, to that. And you know, they don't want to find it. It's like the perfect business model. You know, whatever we cause is going to give us clients in the future, because 50% of them are going to get epilepsy because of how the brain is affected. And then the parents aren't going to be able to tolerate, thus they have them really heavily sedated medications. And then those learning disabled, like Dr. Sherry Tenpenny said, of that other 31, probably 50% of those are on Ritalin, Risperdal, Strattera, some of these other dangerous medications.
Believable. So you singled out one inoculation that you felt you really witnessed a change after it. Is that one on the reduction list? Do you know?
I don't know. I don't really know. I haven't really bothered to take a peek. I'm so skeptical, Crow. It really is terrible of me, because I just, you know, I'm okay. Yeah, he did that. We'll let you see if it happens. And you know.
It seems a bit disingenuous to go in and say, this is a problem, so we're going to reduce the problem instead of removing the problem.
Right, exactly. That also, I mean, and there will be, if in fact they do what they say, and we do go from 72 down to 11, there will be in a very short period of time a reduction. But what I'm understanding is parents can still opt in to the 72 vaccines is what I'm understanding as well. So
I got the list if you want to hear it.
Sure.
DTaP, MMR, polio, Hib, PCV, varicella, HPV, hepatitis B, hepatitis A, influenza, and meningococcal. I'm not sure how you pronounce that.
None of those sounded like the one you singled out.
Well, DTaP, it's the DPT. So that one is, Patrick got the DPT, hepatitis B, and influenza. So actually, those are still on the list. And the MMR, most of the people, many, many, many people say, you know, after the MMR, there was gut problems, and that was when the crying and screaming started, because the MMR damages the gut so badly. So they're still on there.
It's unconscionable. I mean, this is at epidemic levels now, and I'm beside myself, because I basically view the world where most human beings want to be a good human being. Whether their idea of a good human being is mine is a different matter. But at what point does someone get into the middle of their career and start to examine what they've been doing?
Crow, people are so motivated by money, and I know I'm singing to the choir with you guys, but I mean, people are so motivated by money that if you come out of university and you're making money hand over fist, and there are people getting harmed from it, you're not going to change your direction. I know that I've had the opportunity, I guess, to have different meals here and there with people who work for Abbott and Pfizer and this and that. And you only find it because they're, you know, a friend of somebody else that you were meeting, and that person happens to be there. And on different occasions, it's happened like that. And you just, you know, can't wait to get out of there, because I, you know, I want to really tell them everything I think, but I don't want to ruin the life of the other person that is there by telling them everything I think. So everything that they have is based on the suffering of children like mine and mine. So, you know, you got to control yourself, of course, because otherwise that doesn't go so well. But it's a very real problem that there's a lot of people that, based on our suffering and the suffering of our children, they're living the greatest life ever. That's why when you see people like, oh, this person has this massive, beautiful Bentleys and Rolls Royce and these 80 million square foot homes in the hills of somewhere in California that's beautiful. What do they do to get it? Who do you harm to get it? It doesn't mean that everybody who has vast wealth is a criminal. That's not the case at all. Well, I'm not going there. Maybe it is, maybe it's not. I don't know. But I know that the people are very handsomely paid in the pharmaceutical industry.
It's vexing, to say the least. But before we talk about solutions here, I want to ask you, how old is your child now? How long have you been playing his favorite CD for him? And what level or state do you feel like he's in right now?
Well, my own child is one of maybe 100,000 that I've worked with at this point. I've worked extensively. I used to have Facebook groups before they took my accounts down of 60,000 people in 13 different languages. I used to have 60 moderators for those groups. And of course, now I have some Telegram, some Instagram. I still can't, my name and my face, I still can't get an account on Facebook. My child is 25. He'll be 26 this year. And I use it on occasion, and he has done extremely well.
Functional?
Very functional, very, very functional. But he's not my favorite case, because I have grown and learned over the last 15 years, 16, this is my 17th year, playing his favorite CD for him. So as far as what I've seen happen, I've watched thousands of children lose their diagnosis of autism over this period of time, doing my protocol and working with me or following groups on now Telegram and stuff like this. I've even had people send me emails just thanking me. Hey, I'm a mom from Australia and I got your book and I did exactly what you said and my child is now fully recovered and we're just really grateful. Like I actually get those kind of emails from time to time.
Wow. So,
yeah, it's really cool. And of course, a lot of times, most of the time, the people that work with me, you know, that they're like, oh, we use a scoring system called ATEC. It is Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. It's for free at autism.org. And you can see it. I recommend families do it every 90 days, especially if you're doing protocols. You want to measure the recovery. When you get to an ATEC score of 0, that means the child is fully recovered. You don't need anything. You don't have to listen to CDs anymore. You don't have to go on a special diet. There's nothing that you have to do. Just go ahead, live your life, go on school, marriage, whatever you want to do. They're fully recovered. A couple of my kids are now in university already. So some of my first recoveries are in university, which is, you know, extremely exciting. And I'm planning to dance at their wedding whenever they do that, if they ever do that.
Wow. Good, just good for you. But I got to mention, Jason, have we ever covered a better example of why we have social media than what's going on here? Before we came on the air, we talked about books that are not moving off the shelves, which is the exact same problem. There's no way around the control gate now that everything is going digital. And to have 60,000 people in that many languages get cut off at the knees because is a real illustration of what all digital systems are for. And I'll get off my soapbox. But
overnight, Crow, it happened literally the first week of February 2019. And don't you find it to be a coincidence? In 2019, I had my bank account from Chase taken away from me with no rhyme or reason whatsoever. They sent me some, you know, just I tried to use my card. Then they're like, oh, your account has been canceled. I'm like, man, I just paid. I pay the bill every month. And because I just had the so that I could develop credit because I had gotten a divorce and everything had been in his name. So I was always really careful to use my card and pay it every month and this kind of stuff. And then I said, what happened? So then I contact the bank and they tell me, oh, no, you know, I said, give me your supervisor, get on the supervisor, your account. I can't, it says that I can't tell you anything and there's no information there for me to see. You have to wait till the mail, the letter comes in the mail, and the letter states that they've canceled my credit card because they're canceling my bank account. And I had 2 weeks in order to move my money from their bank to another bank of my choice.
You got put on the naughty list.
Very naughty list. And of course, it just happened overnight. My assistant contacts me. She's like, Carrie, what happened? So what do you mean what happened? She's like, all the groups are gone. And I go into Facebook and there's like a thing on the side on the left-hand panel. And you can see your groups. And I had a group where it was just like my mom, my best friend, where I would share like private pictures. I don't post anything personal on Facebook. It was all work-related. Every group was gone. I had nothing. I just had an account. And now what they did, which is even worse, you can see my account, you can send me a message, and I'm a jerk because I don't answer you. Like, they don't even take it down. So I even have that, like, people are probably like, oh, she's such a snob, she doesn't message me back, or oh, she, fill in the blank, you know, what kind of a bad person I am. Because if you send me a message and you're a desperate parent, I don't answer you back, you're going to just assume that either I'm A, in it for the money, or B, just a total snob, or you know, it's gone to my head, or who knows what people start to think.
This is exactly why all the world has gone digital. The controls that they've done to you are coming for everybody if this goes the distance. And what they did right there was they cut you off, but then they left the gate open so people would still wander in. So even after they've silenced you from communication, they're still collecting the people that had an interest who are basically driving into a dead end.
Exactly. Exactly.
The level of control digital systems gives needs to come to light, and people need to be waking up to the fact that if they get their way, it's all of it. Money, everything is going to be that way. And when they closed your account, what did they tell you? Nothing. They said, we closed your account. Mm-hmm. And when you asked why, they said, we closed your account because your account was closed.
Exactly. Exactly. And if we don't all stand up against this, we're all going down together. And we're not. We're not standing up against this. And I, present company included, like, you know, every once in a while I order from Amazon. I shouldn't. I mean, that's why I can't buy anything locally, because all the small stores are gone. And if you go to like a big store, like for example, in the States, there's that Best Buy, for example, and they're kind of the only electronics place. If you go there, they typically don't have what you're looking for. They have a very small selection of things. And that's how we end up going into those places like, for example, Amazon. But look, I mean, my book has gone off of Amazon. It might last 2, 3, 4 weeks before their digital system is able to find my name or the discs that I listen to and take it down.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to win in the long run, but how long it takes us to get there and how long we suffer through this kind of thing, it could be quite a while. But I feel like the tide is beginning to turn, but people are not waking up quickly enough to the main problem. The main problem is we don't have governance. Everyone that we call government is in the same team, whether they fight, whether they act like they're not, they are all pushing in the same direction.
Exactly that. I'm sorry to interrupt you, but that is such a thing is like, okay, our government is totally corrupt. The wings of the same bird. There is no right, left. It's just the right wing, the left wing, and they're flying that same bird straight into a brick wall. Okay, so now what do we do besides sit and whine? I mean, X, that Twitter thing, if I ever go on there, I get totally insane. And I get totally insane more because it's just a bunch of people whining together and complaining together or fighting with each other instead of take your head out of your cell phone. And we have to band together and organize and take our country back. People died for our freedoms. Our heroes died for our freedoms, and we're letting them be taken away. The autism is just one part of the whole thing of what the government is doing. Get out of my house. Get out of my child's body. Get out of my body. My body, my choice. My child's body is my choice until they're 18 years of age. It cannot be mandated. And so, you know, this whole idea of government is, it doesn't work. Close down Washington, D.C. or just make it into a museum for how a republic should not be run. And let's go back to our local municipalities and make changes and do good things and then decide how we want to spend our education dollars. It can just not be coming from Washington. They've sold us out to China. And yeah, anyway, sorry.
Well, they're going for the control grid. You know, the latest thing that happened is our orange president wandered over to the globalists that everybody hates. And he said, you guys are done here with your agenda and nonsense on the environment and all that. And I could just see the genius behind it. I could hear the millions of voices scream. And I told you he was on our side as he boarded a plane to come back to his buddies who are building the data centers, which is the digital prison. And everybody forgets that on his first watch, he brought us COVID. On his second watch, he put a bulletproof vest on Doge and they scraped every bit of data that could be scraped. And they did it with impunity. And until everybody wakes up and starts basically refusing to participate in all these things, this is going to go on. In the long run, we'll come through this. But how long is that run? You know, it really is the question. But let's pull it back around here. Let's talk about some solutions for autism.
Well, one of the biggest is diet. So if you can make one change today, let's say you don't have any money. I work with families all over the world, and there's some people that really don't have money to buy pretty much anything. But you have to feed your child. So what are you going to feed your child? Definitely don't feed them wheat and dairy. So we go on what's called, you know, the first order of business is wheat and dairy, take it out, which is gluten and casein free. Gluten is the protein in wheat. Casein is the protein in dairy. We have to get rid of that right away.
Let me ask a question here. If I was in the middle of nowhere, no part of the industrial machine that makes all our food, and I had a cow and I went out and milked it, would that milk be something to avoid as well?
Correct, because it still has casein. And even if it's lamb or it's goat or it's camel,
okay,
it's still not. And, you know, of course, when we start talking about it, like we're the only living creature on the planet that like drinks another creature's milk. You know, it's kind of creepy weird. So
people made fun of me my whole life because I wouldn't drink milk. It's never been for, that's for a cow. I am weird. And all the people I knew and grew up with all considered, I ate my cereal dry as a kid because if I drank milk, I'd throw it up. But it is weird.
Very strange. It's very strange. So those are like the basics. But I find really people who live far away from civilization, they tend to have an easier chance at cleaning up a diet because they usually are farmers or people of the land. So they are used to, you know, knocking off a chicken for lunch or the cow or the lamb or the goat, fish, this type of thing. So that is the most important thing to really go into the animal meats and fats, because the fat from animals will reduce inflammation. If you can reduce inflammation in the brain and in the gut, then all of a sudden you're going to start this healing that's incredible and have something like what happened with my son, like instant speech, instant eye contact.
So after dairy products and wheat, what else would you add to that list?
Before we move off dairy, what is it about the casein that's so bad? Because Rose is saying that that's in most protein drinks that hospitals give to patients who are sick.
Right.
And almost all people who have stomach surgeries are suggested protein drinks with casein.
Right. Well, they're bad. I mean, anything the hospital is going to give you, everything the hospital is doing is bad besides saving your life. If you're in there for some sort of emergency procedure, they're giving you Jell-O and bread and cheese and things that are not good for us and packaged products. But with the casein protein, if you have a leaky gut, wheat and dairy protein, which is gluten and casein, will get into the gut, will be semi-digested, and that will get through the leaky gut wall and get into the bloodstream. Once you have these proteins in the bloodstream, they will travel in the bloodstream up to the brain, and they will cause glutamorphine and caseomorphine, and there's sort of like a psychedelic type effect, and it causes brain inflammation. And when you have brain inflammation, your neurons are no longer able to communicate with each other. And there goes speech and bodily control and things of that nature. And in a lot of cases, especially when there's strep and we have microglia activation, which is the immune system cells in the brain, it will attack the brain itself. So when we take out the wheat and dairy, thus getting rid of the casein and the gluten, there is a certain level of improvement. So going back to Patrick, my son, when I learned that he had autism, I went home destroyed. Some of my older son's friends' parents were picking up the kids at that point because I had a meeting and with other people at the house taking care of the kids. But I had my son with me. And this mom's like, oh, I have a book on a diet about autism and ADD, ADHD. I'll pass it to you. So she gives me the book the next day. I read it really quickly. And there's a list of permitted foods of which my child only eats potatoes, because by the time he's diagnosed, he's literally only eating things made of wheat or dairy or wheat and dairy, like pizza, quesadillas. That was kind of his favorite stuff. So the only thing on the list that he actually ate were white potatoes. So we chopped them up, we fried them in coconut oil, we put sea salt on them. And 3 days of that, he began to speak. When he wasn't speaking like after my favorite CD disc, he was speaking more like, if you spent enough time drilling, the flower, 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 you'd be like, wow, like it would be something kind of like that, like a sort of drugged speech. But if you get rid of the wheat and dairy, we do start to see improvements at that point.
Is casein in both wheat and dairy?
No, casein is the protein in dairy and gluten is the protein in wheat.
Are you saying all wheat? Like, for instance, if it's Italian wheat, as opposed to the garbage that they grow in America, is it all bad?
Right. It's all bad. It's all bad. Just less bad, but it's all bad. Our bodies are not really designed for these foods. So also the idea now let's take it forward. Okay. So that's me. And, this is, 2004 when I learned about, the wheat and dairy thing, take them out, gluten-free, casein-free. Okay. We start the diet. Patrick's doing pretty good. Then I learned that all grains are bad. So then I do a specific carbohydrate diet. I get rid of all the grains, but now there's a ton of fruit and there's almonds and other things with glutamate, which is an excitotoxic substance in the brain. So I'm going through this learning process of, reading books and going to conferences and applying different diets. And then finally, in 2021, I read the book by Dr. Sean Baker called The Carnivore Diet. And I was like, well, that's interesting. And then I start the carnivore diet myself on myself, just myself. And at that point, my assistant contacts me about a week or 10 days later. She doesn't know what I'm doing. And she says, hey, there's this mom, her little girl just recovered. I think she's 6. And she did your protocol and she's doing the carnivore diet, like literally meaning dead animals. No dairy, because dairy is really not carnivore. It's just something that comes from a cow or a lamb or a goat or something like that. She's just eating meat. I was like, oh my gosh. And then she's like, and there's all these other parents that want to start it. So I said, okay, start a Telegram group. We'll support the families and we know exactly they're doing my protocol. And instead of doing my modified ketogenic diet, I wrote a book on modified ketogenic diet in 2015. So I was really into getting rid of the grains, reducing the carbohydrates because candida and parasites really like carbohydrates. So, I was aware of all that kind of stuff, but I wasn't aware that certain foods like berries or almonds or broccoli are very high in glutamate, which changes, neurochemistry and stuff like that. So that was with the carnivore thing. So we start this 40 kids on carnivore January of 2022. And I was using this ATEC, that Autism Treatment Evaluation Checklist. We did the ATEC prior. 3.5 months later, we redo the ATEC and 10% of those kids recovered. Like they were kids that I've been working with for a while. So it wasn't like, you know, they just happened into the world, right? So that was amazing. And then one of the children in that group that I was working with who didn't fully recover had a recovery. For example, if zero is fully recovered, when I was working with them, I think I started with him. He's about 128 tech, nonverbal, 9-year-old, headbanger, screamer, no sleep, that kind of stuff. After 3.5 months, adding carnivore into my protocol, his ATEC went down to 50. He stopped headbanging. He started sleeping. He got out of the diaper and was talking, not in the terms, you know, like we want, but he's now able to request things that he wants. And he's actually able cognitively to understand indications or orders that the parent is now giving to this child. So that was just a huge thing. I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't keep this quiet. So then I start telling people, they're like, well, where are they going to get the nutrition? So it's very interesting. If you read, there's quite a few books out there, like Dr. Sean Baker's book or Dr. Kiltz, Robert Kiltz. He's a OBGYN expert in fertility. These guys are pretty big into this whole carnivore thing.
Is this 100% meat diet?
It's 100% meat diet, fat and meat.
Yeah, this is one so many. I mean, Jason can tell you, people fight about this nonstop,
right?
Mostly, I think, because of the virtue signaling. But to me, it's part of the programming that goes along with everything. But see, with what's happened to the meat, is this becoming problematic? Because so many places, meat is really tampered with these days.
Well, they're still, even when we're not using organics, they're still doing substantially better because it's still, we're going from, you know, maybe a gluten-free, casein-free diet, which has fruits and vegetables and some dead animals and some grains and stuff. Well, they're all going to have a bunch of glyphosate and heavy metals and pesticides, herbicides, and your cows are too, or your lambs are too, or your goats are too, or your chickens are too. So when we take one-to-one and we switch it out, the children improve greatly. So also, the carnivore diet is the purest of the elimination diet. So a lot of times in autism or with food allergies, people are going to come up and they're going to say, okay, let's eliminate X food for 3 days and then put it back in if there's no change. And then we'll start to go through the kid's diet like that. You know, that works. But if you want to really do a true elimination diet and just know you're on the right track is take out everything, leave in all the dead animals, make sure you have a lot of nice fats like tallow, lard, ghee without casein, duck fat, things of that nature.
And so that means there's absolutely no carbs, right?
Right. So you're true keto as well.
So right. You're getting keto.
You're true keto because true keto is zero carbs. And this other thing that we call keto now is, you know, kind of skating along, like maybe stay under 25, but now you've got a bunch of garbage going in, like these protein type drinks and stuff.
It's unbelievable where we are. I've been seeing so many clips lately that people send me where people are going to the store to get meat, and it's like some kind of weird goo.
What was really interesting to me several years back, I was looking on YouTube, and there's a nutritional archaeologist or an archaeologist who looks at nutrition. And some of the things that really struck me were the size of people. Now, I've lived in Germany, I've lived in Mexico, I lived in the States. And when you start looking at people, for example, I remember one time I did a conference in Chetumal, which is right next to Belize in Mexico. The average Chetumalian, if that was a word, is probably up to my elbow. I'm only a woman about 5'5". I'm not very tall. But they're really, really short people. Really, really short people. Like no neck, really short. I think that they come from the Omeka, and I'm not going to get into history because I'm not a history buff. But what was very interesting to me was about nutrition, about growth. And then living in Germany, I mean, Germans are really tall. They're really hardy. They live to be like 100. That's kind of a regular thing for them. They stay very active until an older age. In Mexico, that's not very common. Usually by the age of 40, there's diabetes in the population of Mexico. It's really pretty common. Definitely overweight, definitely moving less. And so and this is these are kind of generalities. But when they're looking at it, or is this fellow who was, you know, archaeologist and is kind of looking and unearthing, well, the Germans, even 50,000 years ago, were eating kind of like these large goats, these large red meat animals. And then you look at people like the Spaniards who are substantially smaller. They were eating like bugs and fish and bird type things. And just looking back as far as we can go in history that is understood for one way or the other, we can see that there is an improvement in just overall health because grow bigger, a lot of times you could even say, well, you know, the technology, the Germans with their cars and a different thing, you might say like, well, that could have something. But this is over centuries and centuries and centuries of growth. But then I kind of started having my own thoughts based on things that I was putting together. And people can argue. I know I've had people send me like hate mail and we were originally vegetarians. Like, really, we were vegetarians? Really, really? Or you look at the documentary that was done in, the first documentary ever done was in 1920. It's called Nanook of the North. And he was an Inuit Indian. That man never saw vegetable or fruit or grain in his life.
No.
And they're like, yeah, but he died really young. Well, he used to like wrestle walrus for dinner, you know? So this guy had a pretty rough life, and that's why he didn't, but he had very strong teeth. And then, of course, the people who did the documentary, they went back to Bellevue Hospital and they continued the same diet, and they had phenomenal cholesterol levels. They were extremely healthy and their weight was perfect. And they lived to a ripe old age of, I don't know, 90 something.
Didn't they just take the food pyramid and basically turn it upside down? And I don't watch enough TV, but someone told me that South Park made fun of it before they did it.
Years ago.
Well, South Park, that's great. Yeah.
They just inverted it. So healthy fats and all that kind of thing on top.
Right. Well, animal fats are really, really healthy for the human body. I mean, it kind of goes back to, you know, did God make a mistake? And I still don't think God made a mistake. You know, like, these animals were here for us to eat. The whole idea of like the grains and legumes and all that kind of stuff, we just weren't doing it. And it's not like we've evolved. I think we've, I don't know if there's a word, did we devolve, you know, but we definitely are not evolving.
De-evolution.
What about avocado fats?
Well, those are fine. You know, it's not that they're bad or good necessarily when we come to like avocados or, I don't know, some foods like that.
Olive oil, things like that.
Well, okay. But, you know, the seed oils in general, they tend to oxidize very quickly. So can you have some benefits from them if you can get a really good clean one? And we know for sure there's actually olive oil and hasn't been cut with something else. Can it have benefits? Yes, I believe it can have. But I can just take the guesswork out. I'm going ribeye, prime rib, and I don't have to think about much else. You know, I have it once or twice a day and that's it. And if you give it to the child is perfectly fine. I did an interview in August with a family, a little girl and her mom, and she recovered from my protocol doing carnivore simultaneously. And of course, I asked her, I said, what's your favorite food at the end? She's like, meat. And then her mom sent me a text message, a photo and a text message maybe a month later. And it was her little girl cleaning off the meat off the bone of the tomahawk steak that they just finished as a family at a restaurant. It was, you know, so encouraging to see, because once your body feels good with something, the craving for that same thing is still there. It's, you know, you don't have the craving for like a pizza or pasta or cake or cookies or something like that. You don't eat them. Or a crow, like, you know, with your milk. Milk was just disgusting. And it is disgusting, and they call it cow pus, but it's disgusting. And of course, if you're not used to it, then even more so, you don't have a taste for it. And thankfully.
What about eggs?
Eggs are included in carnivore. Actually, if you want to make these bread, it's called cloud bread. You just take egg whites and you whip them to peaks, and then you just put them in any form you want. I usually make them in kind of a bun form, because then I can make a burger, or I can make like a little sandwich or something like that. And they have different forms that you can buy at those cooking stores. They're kind of like a mesh, and you put the egg white foam into them, and you just bake them 350 for about 30 minutes, and they act like bread.
I've never heard that.
They're not as groovy as bread, of course, because, you know, bread is, I mean, I think most everybody really loves bread. I think we just don't eat the bread because we know that it's not good for us. But the egg white fluff, they call them cloud bread, is fantastic. It works quite well. Our kids love it.
You can't get good bread in a grocery store where I am here in Rhode Island. You just can't. It's all industrial waste. It's what I call it anyhow. You look at the, you know, what's in bread, you know? There was a day when, not too long ago, when you picked up bread, there were a handful of ingredients or less,
right?
And that included salt, you know?
Right.
Now it's just not that way. And I wanted to ask, though, when you're talking about a carnivore diet, is it literally any meat from chicken to pork? I mean, it doesn't matter, just as long as it's meat.
Correct. And I try to get people to focus on fat, because fat is where you reduce the inflammation. So I think fat is the most important, and then the protein. Like, for example, with Nanook of the North, they were eating all the fatty meats and then all of the tenderloin, for example, that is just the meat itself with no fat in it. They were giving it to the dogs, the sled dogs. So we do need that fat for us to maintain our brain and our gut and our health.
Clive has been saying this. Clive was the first person we had on. How long ago, Jason? 2-3 years? First time Clive told us that?
Yeah. Yeah.
Something like that. And I was so relieved to hear it, because when I was a kid, I was taught to cut the fat off my steak, but I loved it. So I always ate it when no one was looking. Anyhow, which is odd, you know, maybe my body was trying to tell me.
Right. Well, you know, it's really cool. Tallow bites. So what you can do is you can take that fat, that white fat from the beef, because, you know, you can get that for free usually, or for very, very cheap from the butcher. And when you take it home, cut it into little segments that are maybe the size of a quarter or a silver dollar, and you can put them into the air fryer, and they come out these little crunchy, delicious tasting, spongy, crunchy things. And then, you know, of course, in our house, we're like kind of fight over, like, I want it.
So Rose just pinged me. She said, Clive told us that in episode 222, which was 2020. But anyhow, we're coming to the top of the hour. Jason, is there anything else you want to get in before we take a short break, come back for hour two, and then use our free speech on the private server?
Well, just to tie up with the meat thing, do you get every bit of nutrition you want, you would need from
that we need meat? That we need,
everything?
Yes. That we need, yes.
And is there anything that you think is good to serve with it, just so that you're not just eating a chunk of meat?
Cloud bread. No, I mean, really, no. Bacon.
No vegetables at all?
Oh, no, no vegetables. I mean, if you can do it, no vegetables at all. Because I have people like, oh, but, you know, he won't eat this if he doesn't have vegetables. I have one child that if they took one spoonful of rice and they put it on the meat, he will eat the meat. If they don't put the one spoonful of rice on the meat, he won't touch the meat. So in some cases, we have to do that kind of thing and kind of play a little bit of game to get them. But like pork rinds, for example, those are a lot of fun. And you can use those, you know, kind of dip it into ground beef or that type of thing. So those are sort of fun.
And last time I looked at those, there was one or two ingredients, very few ingredients on pork rinds. Last time I checked, it's been a while.
You can get them directly from the butcher, for not in the States necessarily, but it should just say pork, and usually just pork and salt. That should be all the ingredients. But sometimes there's oil. But usually they just use the fat that comes off of, that is exuded from the rind itself.
Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour here. We're going to take a short break. Soon as we get into hour two, we'll make up for all the ridiculous speech we laid down in hopes that people out all over the world might at least have a shot at this information, and we'll quit playing CDs. But go ahead one more time, tell folks where they can find anything you think is critical to put out.
Well, I believe just going to my website, carrierivera.com, it has my email there. So if you have a question, a comment, a doubt, you know, I don't want to hear like the vegetarian thing, go ahead, it's fine. But yeah, my email is there. My videos are there. My consultations, my books, everything is there. But I answer all of my emails, and I am blocked by like iCloud and Hotmail and Yahoo and AOL and. So you've got Proton Mail or you have Gmail, I've got a chance of getting your mail, and you've got a chance of getting an email back from me.
Well, in hour two, when we open up, we're going to lay down the unbelievable tactics that were used. And that's really all I can say here. I hope you tune in for hour two. Anyhow, hour one is free to everybody at crow777radio.com. That is crow777radio.com. Members know to log in for everything. They get access to all the forums and comment sections. They get free access to the 2-hour film called Shoot the Moon that has 10 awards in the world. That covers a lot of my telescope work. Members get exclusive access to my current solar telescope work. They get access to the stills and imagery I've done around that. A lot of people requested them. I've wrapped them up in PDFs so that when you get those images, you can print some of them up to about 50 inches wide if you wanted. By the way, when you become a member now, you get to choose free images when you're signing up. Anyhow, we'll be back shortly for hour two. And as I said, right in the intro, we're going to correct everything we had to dance around in hour one, so there is no mystery. There it is, man. Hope to see you logged in as a member. And I'd like to wish everybody everywhere a happy, healthy, and higher-minded new era. There it is, man. Cheers.
Come on. is the enemy of knowing.